Accession number 19092, Real One.
Lloyd Bennington, Real One. Where were you born, please?
Emnath. Emnath, Wisbech Gams. Well, it's Norfolk.
That's a village near Wisbech, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just outside of Wisbech.
Which year were you born?
September the 11th, 1919.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in the Wisbech area?
Yes.
Which school did you go?
I went to Amos Road School.
And how old were you when you left there?
14.
So that must have been in 33?
Yeah, 34.
Did you get a job?
Yes.
Doing what?
I was working as a grocer, to train as a grocer at the Star Supply stores in the town.
Is that what you were doing when war broke out?
No, I'd had finished then, and I was virtually out of work, actually, at that moment when the war broke out. But I was, I was a qualified grocer by then, so I was expecting to go in, but of course the war broke out, and that was it.
Had you joined the Territorial Army before the war?
Yes, joined the Territorial in May 39.
Why did you decide to join the Territorials?
Well, if I hadn't joined the Territorial, I joined the Territorials because I thought that I should have friends, I should know boys that were joining, and if I waited, then I should have got the call up later, at any rate. So we joined at that time.
Which unit of the TA did you join?
I was a signaller in the second cameras.
Second Cambridges?
Yeah.
And did the second Cambridges all come from the Wisbech area?
No, they come. The battalion was formed here. It was formed in Wisbech, and then we were made up by people from out of the county. The actual battalion was formed in Sandyland, in a drill hall at Sandyland.
Did they come from all over England?
Yes, some of them. Yeah, some were quite a long way away.
And what kind of signalling training did you have?
Morse code signalling, flag training, and then eventually we went on to wireless. Telephone, of course, field telephone.
And how proficient did you get in the signalling?
Well, we got enough to pass, so we were signallers for the rest of the war, or rest of the duration of the time that we were at war.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did.
Under what circumstances?
Well, it was... Now, when? I don't know. It's gone a long way. Just listened on the radio, I suppose, and that, or wireless as it was then, listened to the wireless.
How did you feel about it?
Well, we had been to camp, as territories we had been to camp, and our calling up papers were virtually being issued before this statement was made, so it was something that we really expected.
Do you feel any sense of dismay?
No, I don't think so, not at the time. I was a young man, and I suppose that would be it.
What happened to you after that?
Well, we were called up into Wisbech, and there we were gradually made up properly into a battalion, and platoons, and into battalion and companies, and then we moved onto the coast for defence of the coast.
Whereabouts?
Well, we were at Clay, Holt, Stiffkey, all, covered the coast, say, from Hunstanton up to Sheringham, or even further.
So this is the North Norfolk coast?
Yeah, North Norfolk coast, yeah.
How were you accommodated there?
Well, mostly we were accommodated in tents. We was in Stiffkey Barracks. There is a summer a barracks there that was at that time, and we were stationed there for a time. And then we moved to... different places. We were at Houghton Hall. We spent some time there.
What were your living conditions like?
Well, as a signaller and always headquarter company, we weren't too bad, to be truthful. I've had a lot worse since.
But the riflemen?
Well, they were out on wherever the defences were, they were with them, so that meant they were there and they had to do their part wherever they were, sort of thing. But I mean, we always had a cover to go, like if it was manning phones or field telephones or whatever you like, you know what I mean? Or we had controls of the local telephones as well along the coast. We had people in our you know, signal sections were taking controls of those, and we were hooked up with field telephones from almost down to South End, a long way down.
And can you put any dates on when you were there doing coastal defence?
Yes, but the spring of 40. And of course, spring of 40.
Were you there very long?
We had, approximately, in all of this, I suppose we had 18 months, I suppose.
Starting in the spring of 1940.
Yeah, well, till the spring of 40, we was really sort of getting, you know, we weren't, all the time they were trying to mobilise, they were full, you know, proper units and one thing and another. But once we got into units, we were okay. And then, by the time the spring of 40 came, we were really a body then.
And you were at Stiffkey?
Yeah, it was at Stiffkey, at Sheringham, at Clay, at Holt. We were at Holt at one time. Basically, the headquarter company was based at Holt at one time. And, of course, the others were on defence at various points along the coast there. We were at Sheringham at one moment. You know, we had a period of time at Sheringham, when the Sheringham was bombed at that time.
Can you describe what happened when Sheringham was bombed?
Well, it was one aeroplane one Sunday afternoon, and it dropped a stick of bombs right across Sheringham. It caused a bit of havoc. I can't remember whether anybody was actually killed. I don't know that, but it caused a lot of havoc at the time.
Were you at Sheringham when the plane attacked?
Yes, I was at, I was in one of the company, I was manning a phone in one of the company headquarters. And it broke our, it actually split our line, my connection to the headquarters, it split the line. So afterwards I went out and put this right, you know, rejoined the line back and got things going again.
And where did the bombs fall in Sheringham?
Right, well, of course the back of the town, as you'd call it, I suppose it's Sheringham, it's a town, but of course the back of it. But there were several places, you know, there was quite a bit of damage at the time.
Do you remember the names of the streets where the bombs
No,
were?
I can't. I'm sorry about that. I wasn't expecting this.
But houses were hit, were they?
I think so, yeah, as far as I can remember.
Any casualties?
I don't know about the amount of casualty.
Were people upset about it?
Oh, yes. That was quite a lot.
Did it happen during the day or the night?
It's on a Sunday afternoon. I can't remember the date, but it was a Sunday afternoon. There was even a busload, I can remember this, there was even a busload of local people down to visitors. You know, they came, fathers and mothers, you know, or mothers and that, they took a bus from here and come to Sheringham to see us. They didn't come to see the dad, they come to see us, and it happened while they were there.
Did this happen during hot weather or cold weather?
No, it was in summer. It was quite warm.
So it sounds like the summer of 1940.
Yeah, but it's not quite a nice summer. It's a very warm summer.
Did you think the Germans were going to attack yourself?
Not at that time, no.
Why not?
Well, we didn't expect anything like that at that moment.
Not even after Dunkirk?
Ah, now you're going back. I wondered then, and so I think everybody else did, because we was really on alert then when Dunkirk came.
If the Germans had attacked, what kind of account do you think you would have given of yourselves?
Well, I think we should have done quite well. We was well equipped by then, and we'd got the artillery behind us, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't have done quite well.
What was morale like in your battalion?
Pretty good. I think it was with most young men. You know, you're young, and you don't think no more of it. You just do your job, and you're paid to do a job, and you do it, and that's it.
Did you mind being away from home?
No, not in particular.
How did you get on with the local people in Norfolk?
Pretty well, really. We had a period while we was in Saldes when my friend and I, Mr. Greek, and friend and I, we had the privilege to be stationed in one of the persons, a Commander de Crepney and his wife. We were stationed there, and we was looked well after. The lady was very good to us.
Were you living in his house?
Living in her house, yes. We had to live and sleep. There was 24 hours a day, you see. So we was there, two of us. One was on duty and one was off. And then, so it was a day and night throughout, like you worked it how you wished to work it.
What was he, a commander?
He was a commander, yeah. I think it was something to do with the British Embassy in Trondheim. I think it's Trondheim, is it, in Norway? And he came out, but he wasn't there very often. He was, you know, away. But the lady was always there.
So it was Royal Navy?
Yeah. But that was one of the very nice moments of her life, that was, because of outside. They couldn't get a bath, but the lady of the house used to, and I'd never been privileged to do this in my walk of life, she used to lay the towels out and tell us we'd never bath, which was, to us, was marvellous, really. But we did really have a lovely time there, but I can't say no more than that.
Any other incidents that happened to you whilst you were on coastal defence?
No, most things were... most things run as they should do. Well, now I'll say this. We did have two planes down, Germans. One was brought at Saltash and one was brought down at Sheringham. I know for the moment I had forgot this. And... the one at Salthouse, they brought the, they got the format. There were three or four now, it's some time ago. But they brought these in to us to where we were at headquarters at that time. And I did see them. That was the first Germans I'd ever seen. But to me, they were very Bolshevik because it was all Heil Hitler. Sorry.
Giving the salute.
Yeah. It was all over there with a boss, you know what I mean? Even under capture, they didn't, like, you know, they weren't going to be told anything. The other one at Sheringham, it came down, and I don't know what happened there, but the plane came down. I don't know anything about that one. Not the details of it now.
How were these German prisoners treated?
Well, we treated them fairly well. Till they was handed on up the line somewhere, wherever they would be taken to.
So you were obviously there during the Battle of Britain, then?
Yeah.
Did you realise how the Battle of Britain was going?
Well, like everybody else, I suppose, the only information was by wireless or whatever was going at that time. But I don't think we could have realised quite how things were, because they didn't attack our coast, did they? Not in any stick to a state of mind at that.
So what happened to you next?
Well, eventually we moved to we went back to Houghton Hall, and then we were mobilised to go up to Scotland, and there we went to Dumfries, and then we got onto schemes then, you know, proper schemes went out on then. We were always practicing then.
What did the schemes involve?
Well, all sorts of, I mean, mine was always signal section, you know, always on the signal side, but we were either attacking something or that was attacking us, you know, whichever way you went. We used to do, we was in Dumfries and we'd go up to the outskirts of Glasgow or the outskirts of Edinburgh on the other side. The Coldstream was one of the points we entered, and you'd be in with the Home Guard. Home Guard used to form part of the schemes, and, you know, it was all schemes to get you ready for battle when it did come.
How did you cope with this kind of work?
Well, I was quite happy, really, to be honest, because as signallers, I enjoyed the job I was doing. I hadn't done a lot of practical training as outside, only the initial training, but I liked it, and I'd got a friend with me, nearly always with me, the same friend, and that was it. I mean, never really in England was bothered at all. Or Scotland, come at that.
What was his name?
Jack Griggs.
Griggs?
Yeah, and he remained a friend of mine till 2 years ago. Unfortunately, he died 2 years ago.
How did the people in Dumfries area treat you?
Well, we were all right with the people, but we copped a time there when the Norwegians came over. And they came over from Norway, you know, when the Germans took over, they'd been in and come in, and they sold all their boats and everything up, and they divided that out amongst the Norwegians that were here. So the only trouble we had was we would all go to these dances at the local dance halls, and they'd line up on one side and we lined up on the other. And the first one that went for girls usually caused trouble. There was a lot of bother there for the time being, but it settled in the end, but there was trouble.
You mean you and the Norwegians were rivals
Yes, that's the idea. It happened.
Was there any fighting?
Well, scuffles perhaps, but not real set-tos, because it used to get stopped, and then one lot was sent out.
Where were these dancers?
Dumfries. We were stationed in Nithdale Mills, Dumfries.
So who got the girls in the end?
Well, it all depended on those who got the most money, and it weren't always us.
Any other memories of being in the Dumfries area?
Not really. We were always happy there, and it was, you know, that our section always seemed to be doing well, and there were no bother really, you know, we were quite happy and content.
And then?
Then after we finished Dumfries, we moved to Crewe Hall in Crewe, Cheshire.
What was the purpose of that?
To get us ready to go abroad.
What did the getting ready involve?
Well, we run battalion schemes again, you know, well, more than that, area schemes, even divisional schemes we went on at that time. We was putting in, so the whole 18th Div was in movement, ready for going out, when eventually got out.
Were you getting new equipment or something?
Not particularly. We were pretty well equipped by then, but at the time we was in Scotland, we was well equipped.
So, what year and month have we reached by now when you're in Cheshire?
Spring of 40.
Not spring of 40, surely. It must be later than that. Spring of 41, you mean?
Oh, 41. Beg your pardon. I'm sorry.
It's all right. And then?
Well, we done the same thing again, only as I tell you, with battalion like then. And then, on the October the 28th, we were told we were told we was going abroad. We got to get ready a week or two before, and some went home on embarkation. Some of us had leave, but some went home on leave, and we were all prepared to go abroad. We actually left on October the 28th.
Can you describe what happened in the journey?
What, abroad? Yes, I can.
Yeah,
very much. We left the battalion. Our battalion was on the. We left on a Polish ship, the Sobieski, from Gorok. Travelled to Newfoundland. But by the time we got halfway across the Atlantic, the Americans put in an appearance. We'd come over halfway with two destroyers, and by the time we got to halfway across the North Atlantic, the Americans put in an appearance. We wondered what was up. There was an aircraft carrier, battleships, cruisers, everything, and they took us into Nova Scotia.
What were conditions like in the Sobieski?
We were mostly seasick. Most of 90% of us were. The whole time crossing the Atlantic, it was a ship that rolled and dipped, and it was a really For me, it was a very bad passage, and I don't think in the week or so that we were travelling, I don't think we half of us here had many meals. Anyway, put it that way, we just had what we could, and then we was gone again. You know what I'm talking about. But when we got to Halifax in Nova Scotia, then things changed. We had American boats. I was on the. The Mount Vernon. And they were all the American. There was two or three of American top liners. And they were to take us. Right the way to. Well, I'll tell you for later, but they were to take us to Singapore. But we was there a day or two all sorting out. And when we moved, we went down to Trinidad. We went down the South American coast till we was sort of partly way down, and then whoosh, we went straight across quick as we could to Cape Town. That's the way we went out and down. And this was an experience for me because I was, as a signaller, I was on duty on the bridge with the captain and like several others were, but I was one of them. And I was allowed to stand on the bridge and then if the captain wanted anybody, he'd say to me, fetch me Colonel so-and-so or Captain so-and-so or Brigadier so-and-so, and I would go to fetch the gentleman for him, fetch the officer for him.
What rank did you have by now?
I was only a private. Never was anymore, but because I was a signal, like, it's a difference, but that's all.
And then?
Well, then we landed at Cape Town, and that was for all my friends, anyway, direct close friends, but we hadn't seen anything like it. It was a marvellous place to be, being warm and all the food you wanted, and the thing that stood out in my mind was we went for some oranges, and they asked for some oranges. He said, "We'll have saved, I think it was a shilling's worth of the old money, and they gave us a sandbag." They gave us a sandbag full, and we didn't hardly know what to do with them by the time we finished. And it was so cheap for the fruit, and we'd had never experienced anything like that in this country. Also, on this trip, the whole trip, going back to this, even from the start, with the Americans, we were fed tremendously. Now, there was steak and everything, which we'd never seen I'd never seen a real steak, tell you the truth, by that time. And the food was absolutely marvellous. And we were on, of course, the first one we got, I think it's November, that's their Thanksgiving Day, and we had their Thanksgiving Day. And that was turkey, but some of us had hardly ever seen a turkey, to be quite honest, and it was a marvellous way they treated us. When we crossed the line, they put on a crossing the line ceremony and give us all a card to say we'd crossed it. But it was absolutely wonderful there, that's part of it was. We had a week, I think it was, I ain't too sure of the dates now of this, but we had so long in Cape Town. And then we moved up to, we were going to Bombay. We should have been, rightfully, we should have been, we were heading, we'd got topies and everything, we were heading for the Middle East, on the oil lines, you know, the oil pipelines in the Middle East, we were heading for. But unfortunately, Pearl Harbor happened just before we got into Cape Town. So we were heading for Bombay to see what was going to happen. But halfway up the Indian Ocean, they switched our brigade, the 53rd Brigade, to Mombasa. And we was there for Christmas 1941, Christmas Day 1941.
What did that consist of?
Well, it was just a stop, because Japan was then making its way quite well into Malaya. Even at that stage, it was well down. And they was waiting to see which way they could get us in and where and how, sort of thing. I suppose that's the only thing we could think of. But we stayed there for a few days. And then, of course, we were destined then for Singapore. And we stopped at the Maldives and then straight into Singapore. And we landed in Singapore on January the 13th, 1942. And thank heavens we landed in a thunderstorm or a storm.
What impression did Singapore make on you on arrival?
Well, I'd always been led to believe it was the fortress in the Far East, the place, you know, the wrong one style point. But it was far from that when we landed. It was, I mean, when it come to actually the defence of Singapore, we were even laying barbed wire at the front. Because they had all the guns, as everybody knows, this is general knowledge, all the guns were facing out to sea. But the Japanese didn't do that. They come down the peninsula, they come down the Malay Peninsula and straight across, and of course there was nothing there. But we weren't there many days before. This was just one brigade. This was the 53rd Brigade of the 18th Div. And we were shifted up into Malaya. And we were on the line for Ayahitim to Pachupahat.
From where?
Ayahitim to Pachupahat are the two names. Ayahitim is on the middle road and the Pachupahat is on the coast road. Then we were the battalion was in action there.
How did you move up from Singapore to this line of defence?
We were took up by transport, and we were all transported up properly in that case. But I think the Japanese were down to Mua by then. I think the body of the Japanese were somewhere in the Mua, as far as I can remember now. But they were there, and we wasn't long before we made contact. We lost one man from a party. One signal was out with a carrier, and he was killed on even the first day that we went, the battalion went into action. So bodies of them were all over the place, you know what I mean? The Japanese didn't just, you could not fight a Japanese by seeing him. They were blocking there'd be so many a group ahead of you, let you in, put a roadblock behind you, then the whole lot was in, and then you'd got your fight your way out the best way you could. That's what happened to us in the end. We stayed in Pachupahat for quite, I don't know, a week or two, I think. And, you know, it was a battle there. We had lost several men there.
But you were doing your signals?
I was on signals, yeah.
Pachupahat.
Yeah. The only connection I've got to Pachupahat that really, it's a story, because Mr. Griggs wasn't with me then. He was always my partner as a signal. Almost all through the war years that I had, he was my partner. But this one, I had another friend, Mr. Smith, R.A. Smith. Right? And one night, the signal officer on duty at the exchange where I was in at that time, he said, will you take Smith and go down to, I don't know what company, one of the companies. And it was a track, and there was a quarry at the end of it. And I'd got a lay of line going down, you know, field telephone line, which we used to carry one on our back and roll it out, you know, the reel out as it went, and need the other one to feed it out. And we'd have a telephone with us, and we hooked that up at the other end when we got there, which was okay. And we did this, and we had the night with them. And then the next morning, the company man said, well, we're pulling out shortly. He said, there's no need. They tell me there's no need for you to take your line back. But take your telephone, you know, take your field telephone and make your way back, and I'll send a man back with you, a rifleman with you, to see you back. Well, we got back to headquarters all right, but as soon as the company pulled through, they were set about by the Japs must have let us through. They let us three through, and they hammered the company at that time.
And what did they hammer them with?
Yeah, well, they shot into the company and got several of the men and one thing. You know, I mean, they really set fail, you know, into the. But luckily, I think that, you know, it wasn't too bad. But it was just a group that was in there, you see. But they had let us through, and then knew the company were there. And when they got more men, they were having to go up at more of them.
So it was rifle fire there.
Yeah, oh yeah. It was,